You don't know me, but my name is the Doctor, and your life is in danger, okay?
It's a glorious day in Fine Time, where everything's fine all of the time.
I tried to link, but they're gone.
There are creatures out there in the real world. There are monsters, and they are coming to get you.
Just look at my close friends. Look how many are missing. I want you to be very careful and look to your right.
Spoilers.
The Discussing Network presents Discussing Who, a Doctor Who podcast. I'm Kyle Jones, and I want to start this week by welcoming back Clarence Brown. Mr. Brown, you're smiling. You're happy to be here. How are you?
I don't know why I'm smiling, because I'm angry. This stupid episode has been in my craw for the last few days, but I'm positive. I'm here for you guys to bring me up. I think I like the episode, but I have issues, and we're going to talk it out. That's why we're here, right? That's why we're here, right?
Indeed, indeed.
That is why we're here.
So not only do I have Clarence Brown here, as always, Lee Shackelford. Mr. Shackelford, how are you?
Very good. Very good indeed. And I've been so eager to talk about this episode. Nothing has energized me more than our chats offline with Clarence saying he didn't like it.
Oh, this spoilers.
Is going to be fun. Yeah.
Okay. You know, that's what's interesting about this, because if you go back and you listen, for the most part, we either all like this episode or whatever that episode is, or we all generally dislike an episode. Very rarely do we have one of us who has an alternate opinion. And usually it's me that has the alternate opinion. Mm-hmm. I think.
Yeah. I think so too. That's why I'm so interested. I'm like, what, Clarence? I expected that from Kyle.
Let's be clear here. There's no Batman v Superman, but no, it's not that bad.
Wait, who was Martha in this? Oh yeah, okay.
If only we had Martha. Okay,
maybe so. All right, so I want to get out the door and say a little bit of unfortunate, sad news to get us started with. As of today, we lost William Russell. He is our first companion, along with Susan and Barbara. And I'm looking at my image that I put up, and if what I'm seeing is it's a little bit lopsided, a little bit, maybe.
Hmm. I'm just seeing the text overlapping, but
it's not supposed to be doing that. Hmm. Oh well, again, but Kyle. Yeah. Don't mash buttons that you don't know what are.
He shared a November birthday with my wife, not the same year, I shall stress. But I could always remember his birthday because it's hers. So he was just shy of turning 100. So a good run. Good on you, Mr. Russell.
Indeed.
Indeed, indeed. So gentlemen, do either of you have anything else before we get started? Because I want to get into the knockout, drag-out fight.
It's not going to be a fight, man. It's not going to be a fight.
We're the ones who don't fight.
Yes, yeah. Indeed. Peace and happiness, man. Yeah.
Now, all jokes aside, I have, whenever I say get into the knockout, drag-out fight, I've been going down the social media route again, and it still boggles the mind of how many people who just seem to have haterade for no reason. And, you know, Nicole, you and I have had a conversation about how you may not like something, but you can constructively give a reason why you don't like it. You can balance that negative with a reason why, and the fact that you want to like it. It still amazes me that there are people that are posting Doctor Who is dead and, you know, worst ever and et cetera and so forth. And the thing that gets me is if you post something that is positive, they still want to post saying, oh, what show are you watching? You must not be watching Doctor Who.
So I felt this week.
Yeah. I'm joking. If you disagree with me, you're wrong.
Yes, and I don't get it.
It's as simple as that. You're just wrong.
But at least with this one, we can kind of see a clear divide, possibly, right?
I'm eager to get into it, but yeah.
Yeah, more than all the rest of the episodes, yeah. I think this one, in itself, the story they tried to tell may be divisive by nature.
Yeah. Hmm. But fascinating, right? Because it's kind of transparently about social media.
Yeah.
Hmm. So, I mean, that's one of the things it's about.
Yeah, what is it about? Okay, that's what I'm, what is it about?
What is it about?
I know what it's about. It's about something that we can all agree on. And you want to know what that is?
What episode number it is?
Nope, we can't agree on that. But we can agree that if you have not seen this episode, put us on pause, go out, watch the episode, come back, because from this moment forward, spoilers.
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 Spoilers. Spoilers.
Alrighty, the spoiler warning has gone out, and we are back to review Dot and Bubble. This is the fifth episode of the 2024 series of Doctor Who, first streaming / airing on the 31st of May and the 1st of June, 2024. It starred Shuti Gatwa as the 15th Doctor and Millie Gibson as Ruby Sunday. Lee, I'll start with you. Summary view, what say ye?
Well, my favorite author of all time is Jonathan Swift, and I appreciate satire and always do. And this just felt to me like 45 minutes or whatever of solid Swiftian satire, which is one of the things that I think science fiction fantasy do best. I mean, like Gulliver's Travels. And I really appreciated it on that level. And then I've heard people saying, well, really, this is an episode in which not that much happens, that they sort of felt like there wasn't enough forward momentum to the story. I don't know. But I was completely willing to forgive that, even if true. And then there's two pivot points for the character we've been following throughout, for Lindy Pepperbean, that truly staggered me. And I think they did a lot of other people too. And I think that's great when a TV show can introduce something that is credible, but also leaves the audience saying, "What?" That's fantastic writing, man. So love it.
Yeah, man, I think I'm a bit torn on this one. I don't quite know whether to think this episode is just a brilliant masterpiece or just clumsily written. I think you can kind of read it both ways. That being said, this episode was set up for me to absolutely love. I've preached about how much I love Black Mirror, and I talk about The Outer Limits sometimes in Twilight Zone sometimes on the show. And this had all the makings to be something I really, really liked. The world building that we got for the episode, I thought was really interesting. But I kind of feel there's just a bit of, again, clumsiness or brilliance. I don't know. But it felt clumsiness in the storytelling. And maybe it's meant to be that way, so you can look back on it with a different view once you've seen it in its entirety. But it felt a bit clumsy to me. Me and my girlfriend watched this, and both of us, you know, she's not really a Doctor Who person, but both of us by the end of this episode were quite puzzled by the Doctor moment at the end, because it didn't really feel like it connected. Now, again, you go back and watch the episode, you pick up some of those things. But this episode, I just feel like it was trying to do so many things, and I'm not sure it did any of them well. Yeah. I don't know. Let's talk about it. I want to be talked up.
You feel like it kept coming close, but not.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hmm.
I have a question for you. And Clarence, I'm going to go ahead and ask it before I tell you what I think, because I don't want to accidentally forget this question. At some point, I want you to answer the question, had there not been the angle at the end, if you know, the twist at the end, for lack of a better pun, didn't have the twist at the end and you had left it with the social media angle, would that have changed your opinion? So I want to come back to that question in a minute. But for my take, I think I loved the fact that, and I'll just be honest, I am a little bit ashamed that I didn't pick up on some of the tales in the initial watching because it came out of left field. You know, maybe I was just enjoying, and I knew she was not a very nice person. I knew that from the, from watching and seeing the things that she did. But one of the things that really got to me that made it such a awesome watch for me on a high level was the fact that it did slap me in the face out of left field, and it just came out of nowhere. And I'm seeing this character that, regardless of what he looks like, you know, whether it's the 10th Doctor, 9th Doctor, 4th Doctor, 1st Doctor, all of these other incarnations, maybe with the exception, of course, of the Fugitive Doctor, those people would have migrated to and said, take me with you. And knowing that it was the same person and that they were rejecting, that just really got to me. And for that, if you upset me in a way that makes me think, and the fact that I can't stop thinking about the episode, that to me is why it's brilliant. Whether it made me have warm, fuzzy feelings or not, I just thought that that part, for me, was well executed. And then again, that's just the way, you know, I interpret it.
Yeah, can I pick up a comment? Absolutely. Real quick? One here from Nicole saying that, was it a twist, though? She said she noticed the all-white cast immediately, which I did as well, but again, it really just didn't jump out. And we're going to get into these things, but it really just didn't jump out to me as being the point of the story. And she also mentions the microaggressions, which I've talked with Tasha in her chat about. They were definitely there. I don't know. To me, when there's a message like this in Doctor Who, whether it's racism or, you know, save the planet or whatever, to me, it's not often the main point of the story. It's like more subtle and you pick it out at the end. But it flipped on in his head here, or twisted, as Nicole said. It was kind of the main point of the episode. And maybe that was the thing that just made it not feel quite right to me. And I know we had some episodes that have been focused on race and things like that. So it's definitely not out of the norm. But just something about the way the episode was structured that made me feel so many different things that I didn't really know what to think by the end of it.
Yeah. I think that's why it may take a rewatch. And I'm noticing several people in the comments saying that. And I wanted to point out something else that our brilliant friend Nicole was saying, because I'm calling her brilliant because she agrees with me. because I'm in my bubble, right? She's saying that it's about being in your own bubble with regards to race, yes, but also about classism and groupthink of any kind. I think that's what's genius about this episode, is having people is to make the metaphor visual, that everybody's got their head in a bubble. They can't walk forward without somebody telling them which way to walk. And so that's about everything that constructs your world, which may involve your racial identity, but also about your class. These are the rich kids. Yeah, there you go. These are the rich kids too, about the entitlement, about how difficult it is to do my job that I have to do for 2 hours a day. I mean, my hands get chapped. You know, just no concept of how the rest of the world works, because it doesn't matter. They're irrelevant. And I think the indictment is we all do that to some degree or another.
That's true.
And I thought that at the end, that final betrayal or rejection, that could be about this black man is telling me to go with him. No, but Ruby's also kind of dressed like a dock worker. I could just as easily see Lady going, girl, no, I don't know where you think you're going to take me. But, you know, it's the whole sphere.
Yeah.
And I don't know. That's would we crucify one of our own heroes for our own good? You know, would we throw Ricky September, you know, under the bus? Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. We do it all the time. Yeah.
Let's focus on the social media aspect for a second, because, you know, we're talking about the bubble. We're talking about social media and having the bubble. You know, I think that there's two ways that I can look at this from the social media bubble. A, we are all about technology. Look at people driving down the road and you see people with phones in their hands. You know, mm-hmm. you see college campuses and you've got people with phones in their hands walking around campus. And even beyond all the technology that we have, I mean, you know, there's the Apple virtual reality computer. There's the Vision. Well, that's the Vision Pro. There's the Oculus Quest. There's the Facebook, you know, all these different things that's virtual reality. And so we've got this access to technology. So even beyond that, that kind of tells us what to do. Like, look at, you know, hey, Alexa, go buy this. Hey, Siri, look up this. Hey, fill in the blank. You know, hey, Google, blah, 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 blah. You know, and now you've got even further with, you know, OpenAI, ABC, and, you know, whatever. What I am saying even further than that is even into social media, you've got all these different social media platforms, but even into that, you've got algorithms into social media. Because every single time I open Facebook now, if I'm not on the Discussing Who Facebook page, I'm just as myself, my feed is nothing but Doctor Who, because that's what I've been interacting with lately. Mm-hmm. And so anything that I might have did 3 months ago is gone, you know? So as far as I'm concerned, as far as that bubble is, it's all Doctor Who. And if that's all I see, then that's all I'm going to think.
Right. No, I long ago silenced everybody who doesn't agree with me politically on social media, just, you know, because it was giving me a stomachache. But you see what I did, right?
You formed a bubble.
I made a bubble that, you know, I never hear anybody disagree with me. It's lovely. It's very, very nice.
Well, for the same thing with YouTube, if I see all of these hater raid YouTube videos, I immediately not just dislike and don't suggest, I will go and say, don't recommend channel. I don't even want to hear
it. Whoa. That's a little extreme, man. Whoa.
If you can't be positive, I mean, if I'm going to sit there and watch something, again, I love watching Who Culture. Sean did a review. I actually commented saying, respectfully, Sean, I see your points, but I disagree. Some of the points that he made. I don't mind having discourse, having a discussion. Clarence, love the fact that you don't completely agree with everything, because that makes good conversation. But what's not good conversation is just that bubble, again, having a bubble around your head and saying, I'm right, you're wrong.
Yeah. And, you know, we talk about this a lot at my house because this is my wife's, you know, field of study. And it fascinates me. And you, a minute ago, Kyle, you were saying we are surrounded by this technology. And that's one way of looking at it. But I think the technology is the gateway. I mean, in this story, it's not about the mechanism that makes it all work. Well, I guess ultimately it is, because the mechanism hates them. But you know what I mean? The world that they live in and that they loved was not. It was about human connection. It was about the people being able to talk to each other and to see what they're wearing and to share loves and likes and so on. To be able to have the Ricky September fan club, you know, literally in your face all the time, and that's really what we crave, is these interactions with other people. The problem is that we also have brand identities, that we all, especially people with low self-esteem, we take on something else outside ourselves and say, that's a great thing. That's me. I'm going to be that now. So I'm going to be Kansas City Chiefs. Look at my shirt, you know?
Yeah.
That's who I am. I'm Coca-Cola because I love it so much, you know? And then when somebody comes along and says, yeah, give me Pepsi any day, you got a fight on your hands, because I've turned my identity over to whatever that thing is. And you know, we've been saying in other discussions, clearly our observation is that nobody hates Star Wars with the kind of rage of Star Wars fans, right?
Yeah.
And we're seeing the same thing this year, and I think we did, you know, a couple of years ago too. Nobody hates Doctor Who like Doctor Who fans. And it's because we have got a version of it that we curated, and we said, that's the show that I like. That's me. And then you get a new showrunner or whatever, and the show changes, and you go, hey, that's not me anymore. You've taken you're offending me. Mm. And I think that's where it gets confused. And that's why people will say, oh, Discussing Who, you know, they really like this. Well, that's because they're stupid.
Right, exactly.
Hey, hang on a second. There's no thought process there, and there's no empathy. There's no acknowledgement these are human beings talking. It's just, yeah.
So let me ask this question, Clarence. Still on the social media, going back to the question that I posed earlier. Had this just been the slugs and the sentient AI, and the doctor has to rescue and rectify the situation, rescue these people, and that's how it ended. He rescued them, and they go off on their merry way. Would that have changed your opinion some of the story?
It would have definitely made it a different story. And even Lei Jin mentions he was kind of, wondering what happened at the end. I was kind of the same way. For me, the speech from the doctor, if you didn't pick up those microaggressions by the end of it, you're just like wondering what's going on. I thought this was about classism. I thought this was about being in your bubble, whether your bubble be this literal bubble around your head or it be the bubble of your community, of your class, of the people you go to school with, whatever your bubble is. I thought that's what it was about. And just staying in your circle and not really even giving anything outside of your opinion the time of day. So, and I'm forgetting the question because I'm going on right here. But go ahead.
No, keep going, please.
But no, man, it just felt so disjointed to me. And furthermore, when you talk about the slugs or the enemies or part of the enemies, which the other part, I guess, is AI. I guess we'll talk about that. I think the slugs weren't really needed in this episode at all. I think they were there, and help me out here. Maybe they were just there just to show there's other monsters. One looks like this young lady, and the other looks like this big thing that just swallows you up like a what's the feed me Seymour, whatever plant that.
Yeah, I got you too. Yeah.
So I don't know. I'm going on. Go ahead. I feel like I'm rambling now. Yeah, I feel like I'm rambling.
No, your points are valid because. If I'm being brutally honest, which I'm wanting to be brutally honest, had I not got the scene that I did at the end from the doctor and that having that Murray Gold music behind it and all of that, I would have probably gone away with saying this episode was a little bit meh. If it would have just stayed on the social media dot and bubble train and that would have been it, I would have been like, okay, that was good. Okay, next week, what's happening? I don't think I would have been invested like I became with the story had there not been that. Lee, what do you think?
Possibly, yeah. I mean, watching it the second time through, I was thinking, which parts of this could you take out and have it still work? We've been talking the last couple of weeks about the fact that the thread running through this season seems to be rogue AI, and that's interesting. So do we need the slugs?
I don't think so.
Or mites or whatever you compare them to, Audrey 2. We need Nicole back as the co-host on the show. I just keep reading her comments in the chat saying, yes, yes. Oh, and also that, yes. But yeah, she was just saying, and I forgot my point having said that.
I just said the slugs were taking out the trash.
Taking out the trash. She was reminding us that we know that an earlier draft of the script was called Monsters, Monsters Everywhere.
Yes.
Which, cause a lot of it is kind of,
yeah,
really on the nose and, yeah, and after the snap here is saying humanity is the villain. Yeah, I think Monsters, Monsters Everywhere might have sort of given it away.
Yeah, I think so.
Everybody except the Doctor and Ruby and this are monsters. Yeah, we never do find out what happened on the home world. We don't really find out where these people think they're going. A lot of unanswered questions, and it's just...
So, Lee, you made my wheels start turning with something you said. That everything seems to be connected with a rogue AI, right?
Maybe.
Well, we're returning to unit headquarters for the finale. I mean, that's already been seen in the trailer, so I'm not, saying anything that we don't already know. You know where I'm going with that, I think, maybe. We were introduced the last time we were in unit headquarters in the 60th anniversary to the Vlox, I believe was the name. Mm-hmm. That was this being that was looked like a big computer in a chair.
That's right.
What if he is behind, or it is behind, or whatever it is behind whatever this rogue AI-ish? Maybe.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, we've talked about the fact that maybe this season is that we're actually watching a TV show, you know, that in the last episode, we're going to kind of pull back a little bit and show that a lot of these things only make sense if, you know, that there's one actor in the show who keeps turning up in every episode, you know, that starts to make sense if there's some kind of meta thing going on. I look forward to seeing where, if anywhere, it's all going, but
Can we go back to the, I know we're kind of out of order here, but the end, just for a minute, we brought up earlier. Why do we think that the young lady and her friends did not go with the doctor? Is it merely the racism, classism? Because to me, what made that feel so weird to me is because usually in times of strife and times of stress and times of trouble, people tend to grow closer together instead of.
But we do tribalize.
That's true.
And I think these people already knew their tribe, and the doctor and Ruby are not of the people.
But I'll take it one step further. This is why I think that it was more racial than culture or class.
Because she addressed them as you. Of course, that could just mean the doctor, or it could mean both Ruby and the doctor. So that was another part that confused me. I just thought she was talking to both of them.
But see, when Ruby, so when she says, I can't come with you, or whatever it was that she says, Ruby asked her, because I went back after, you know, we had our chat, and I went back and I watched that, and Ruby specifically asked her, so she's asking Lindy, or whatever her name is, racist bitch, you know, so she's asking her the question, and she says, you know, why not? And she looks not at Ruby. She specifically says, because you, sir, are not one of us. Not
she does say you, sir. That's true.
Okay. She says, you, sir, are not.
There.
So with that being framed, you've got Ruby asking the question. You know, she didn't say because the two of you are not one of us. Are you the two are not like us? Ruby asked the question, why not? She says, because you, sir, are not one of us. And then goes so far even to say it was, you know, she says to the effect, well, you did save us, but I guess that was your duty. And then she says, screen to screen is borderline acceptable or something to that effect. But in real life, no.
Yeah. And we usually look for our far-flung future sci-fi stories to be more Trekkian, more optimistic, more people coming together. So I have to say, for me, after realizing what was really going on through many conversations and chats, this is just a scary future. It's a scary future. And I have to imagine some people came away from this just kind of, feeling kind of down. if this is what the future holds.
And Nicole even brought up another comment where she said the voodoo and the contamination bits really drove it home.
Yeah. Things that the three of us in the Deep South have certainly grown up with. So we know that does seem very pointed to the black man. So,
You know, go ahead.
I wanted to bring up something from earlier in the episode, or actually persistent throughout, is that Lindy keeps saying, you're so stupid. That's stupid. You're stupid. I hate you and you're stupid. But when she finds that she can't walk without the bubble, she says, I'm so stupid. Mm. So this is one of her operative words, but it's not just a weapon. It's also a judgment. And, you know, one of the things, one of the red flags about living in a social media bubble is that scientists are studying now, you know, is about how destructive it is to self-esteem. And I thought that was kind of interesting that, and it makes sense why people like Lindy are just kind of hollow inside and that really the only identity they have is the one that they've that exists in the bubble. So even when the dots and bubbles are turned off, all they have is each other, as long as they're going to keep reinforcing that. Please admire how beautifully dressed I am, and let's not talk about the fact that secretly I know I'm stupid.
Mm.
Well, you're stupid.
We're all stupid.
We're all stupid. But we don't talk about it. Say that's a nice top you got on.
Yes. So,
if they can even look beyond the bubble to see anybody around them. I thought that was good. Yeah.
How many times have we seen people who literally can't see what's right in front of their face? No pun intended, sure. Because they're glued either to their computer, to their TV, to their phone, to their whatever. Life passes them by simply because they're in their own Insta, Twitter, X, YouTube, fill in the blank.
Or our religious beliefs or any number of other things. Yeah.
So here's a question for you guys. At one point, she says people who are 17 through 27, and of course, if you're rich enough, get to come to find time.
I wondered if that's what the slugs were for. If they're eating people when they, if that's why some people were being passed by, is because they weren't 28 yet. Then it becomes Logan's Run. So I don't know. But the way this whole world works doesn't. You can't examine it for too long, because watching it the second time, I was thinking, who keeps this hallway so clean?
Yeah, it's true.
Ruby's apartment is really nice. Somebody's apparently making up the bed after her, or, you know. So how does this work anyway?
Very interesting thought. So let's talk about Ricky September for a moment. What did you guys think of this character? And Clarence, I'll start with you. Ricky September.
Oh, the poor guy never had a chance. interesting character. I love the fact that he was able to break the norm of being in the bubble at all times. And, you know, sometimes you just have to get offline, cut off your internet, put down your phone and go read a book. And, you know, that's kind of what he did. So, yeah, they definitely set him up to be very enduring once we knew that he was breaking the cycle. And I'm like, he seemed kind of weird on the bubble, but now in real life, he's kind of cool. So, hey, let's do this.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, at last, we found a character that we really like. Yeah. Oh, nothing bad happens to him. Oh, geez. Ow.
So what did you think, Lee? What did you think of Ricky?
Because so much of our immersive social media is about celebrity, I thought that was inevitable. You'd have to have a character like that. And if I was writing this, you know, that I would, several people I've noticed throughout the chat here have been saying he would have been a great companion. Is he, at the end of the day, would he have been any better than, you know, taking Lindy in the TARDIS? I think probably, just because I think he's telling the truth. He must be telling the truth about turning off the bubble, because he really does know how some of the rest of the world actually works. But he hasn't challenged it enough to not be a celebrity.
All right. So let me ask you guys this question. I agree with everything that's just been said, but was Ricky's death needed for him not to be there at the end? Because of what we saw of Ricky, would he have intervened maybe on the doctor's behalf to them if he would have been there, or would he have just followed with them? What do you guys think?
I think his death devalued the end for me, because when she closed that door on him, I was through with Lindsay. I didn't care what she did for the rest of the episode. That's why I guess maybe the speech didn't hit me as it should have, because I was I was checked out. I was like,
ready for her to die. Right.
Go in the forest. Do your thing.
Have fun with that.
What do you think, Lee?
Oh, I think he definitely would have intervened, and his celebrity would have caused everybody to stop what they were doing and listen to what he said. So you could get a different ending to the episode by not killing Ricky September. You could still have her betrayal of him, but maybe he's still able to deflect the dot and he would live.
Yes. And Clarence, go ahead. I'm sorry, Lee, please finish.
Well, no, that's all. Just that. Yeah, then he would have been in that last scene, and it would have gone very differently, alas.
Ooh, coincidence. We don't need to go coincidence. We all know what happens when we have coincidences. Mm-hmm. Clarence, you brought up a very good point. I think the ending may would have been a little bit more impactful, because I'm serious that you brought up an excellent point, because I'm sitting here framing it in my head. You're right. I was ready for her to have something bad happen to her as soon as we see her turn on him and basically sacrifice him just so she could make sure, because she is already opening the door. So it wasn't like she was that much more in danger, but she had to ensure that she wasn't going to be by turning on him.
Yeah.
Hitherto, we hate her at that point.
Yeah, I mean, proud of that, I was still rooting for her. I think I was still rooting for her to survive. Yeah. Let's make it to the basement or wherever the sewer.
I was impressed, if nothing else, by her supernatural ability to run down a flight of stairs when she was walking into a pole just a few minutes earlier.
Yeah.
And I saw a post on social media, I think Facebook, that said the hero of the episode was not Ricky September. It was the pole.
Yeah.
She got to walk into the pole.
Yeah, on your second watch, you have to be rooting for the pole.
Yeah. Yes. But Clarence, let me ask you again. I'm going back to you. But framing it with her not turning on him, would that have, and not having that dislike of her, utter dislike of her, would that have reframed that ending for you in any way?
I think it would have, because like I just said, I was still rooting for her up until she shut that door, because I thought there was, even though she's obviously in this bubble, she's being a jerk to these, because I just thought she was being a jerk to Ruby and the doctor, because they were, it's like I'm on my chat message with you guys and people keep interrupting. I'm like, get away. You know, I just thought it was that type of thing. They're encroaching on her ability to have fun with her friends, which is what I thought was happening. But so I was still kind of on board with her until that moment where she shuts the door. And if she had not have done that, I think the moment when she turns on the doctor probably would have been more impactful, because it likely said if Ricky September was there, he may have been able to push the conversation to add more exposition to kind of get what was really at the root of her actions. So, yeah, I think it could have made a slight difference for me at the end.
You know, I have to give, before we move on, I have to give the actor who was playing her, Callie Cook, I believe is her name, did an awesome job of creating a character that I think, for the most part, I'm sure there's probably some out there who like her, you know, may they go to Fine Time too, but she created a character that was quickly and universally disliked and hated to some degree. Mm-hmm. And that's hard to do, you know, to come across as such a icky character.
Yeah. So. Well, and to be genuinely appealing as well too. You can see why her other shallow as an eggshell friends just adore her, you know. But I was pleased to see her turn up on somewhere on social media that I saw. As the actor saying, please, 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 I am nothing like that character. I just want everybody to know that is so not me.
She's acting, guys.
Yeah, it's called acting anyway.
So before I get to the end, I do want to mention there was a twist, of course, and we see her mom, the character's mom, actually be Susan Twist.
Yeah.
Nothing more I would say about that, because we're used to seeing Susan Twist, except for we finally get a recognition, from both Ruby and the doctor.
Yes.
Saying that they recognize her.
Yeah. And I liked the reference to 73 yards, because Ruby is not sure where she's seen her before.
Correct.
And I thought that's interesting that some part of that still exists.
That's interesting.
In her head. Yeah. But the doctor recognized her as the face on the video screen, you know? And it's
All right. I did make a few notes before I get to the final scene that I want to talk about Shuti for a moment. But I made a list of what was considered the covert or overt racism. And we may have mentioned most of these, but I want to mention these really, really quickly. Lindy immediately blocks the doctor in the chat. When Ruby appears, she is annoyed by her, but does not immediately block. She is upset by the idea that the doctor and Ruby are in the same room. When realizing that the person she blocked and the person with Ruby are one and the same, she says that she thought you all looked the same. When introducing the doctor to her friends, she makes a comment that he would be disciplined once everyone was safe and that he was not as stupid as he looks. And all the residents of Fine Time, of course, we already know that, were white. So, dum-dum-dum. So we keep... Go ahead.
Yeah, no, Nicole's right. It's all there. It's all there from the beginning. It's just being slowly unpacked. Yeah. But see, I understand Clarence's point, too, that he didn't pick up on the total whiteness of everybody in Fine Time. And why should we? We've had a century of cinema and television in which everybody's white, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like most of Doctor Who, we have to say. So, you know, it kind of looked like we're just doing it again, you know, same as usual.
So
and
when
that's
I,
why it sneaks by the radar, it's kind
of. So when I went back and watched it again, I think that the casting of the white actors were very strategic or was very strategic because there were a few that they had so much fake makeup to give you that pastel / overly photoshopped look, you know, where and I want to say that some of the characters could have been of a mixed nationality or another nationality with all the makeup on. So you really weren't sure, even though they were all at the end, you realize they're all white.
Yeah. Some of those people are passing.
I'm not trying to.
I think that's very interesting, though.
But you know, but I think, I don't think everybody looked the same. And so I think it was another just a veiled attempt of you not seeing what was obviously there.
Yeah.
Maybe.
I thought the makeup and stuff was just a result of being in the future. And this just was the look of the time. I thought it was just the aesthetic, right. Almost like a cheesy version of being a superstar type of thing. And that's what I thought they were doing.
I get that. Yeah.
But there's also an interesting point when you think about the racism that Lindsay has in this episode and where does her racism derive from? So we know her planet is destroyed, so we don't know what the heck, you know, happened there. But is her racism a result of the classism? And maybe that's the point.
Well, yeah. You know, I can see that. That makes a lot of sense to me. Yeah. Two intriguing things coming up in the chat I want to share is that Tasha postulates that maybe the reason why the doctor couldn't get past the force field was race-related also. They have an anti-black man bubble around that. You know, that's an intriguing
theory. It's not unheard of.
No,
I mean,
so
a technologically advanced whites-only sign.
Exactly. It's just, yeah.
I mean, quite literally.
Quite literally. So you know, it's not explained why the TARDIS can't get into the city otherwise. So, yeah, I just think that's very interesting. And our friend Chris Temby points out that This is meta. This is about the show. But just think about this. The smartest person in the universe is here being played by a man who was rescued out of the Rwandan massacre.
Yes.
So, yeah. And this was, if I understand right, one of the first, if not the first scene that he shot for the show.
Yes. I'm so glad you brought that up because I really assumed that last week, because, you know, we had said that was her first scene that she shot.
Right.
But not realizing the first few seconds, minutes, or whatnot, and the ending were shot out of order. Mm-hmm. You know, he wasn't actually there chronologically at the beginning of the episode.
Yeah.
But yes, this was his first day on set. Because if you look at his haircut is a little bit different than all the other times we see him because he was still recording Sex Education.
Yeah.
But yes, first scene out of the box.
And what he brings to that of his personal history and his understanding of who this character is and his place in the show, that's just astounding. Yeah, Nicole is saying, I just love the fact that he first laughs and then is screaming in frustration. It's a hysterical laugh. It's visceral is the right word, I think. My goodness.
Yeah.
What a performance.
Again, I think we have to also point out this was borderline another Dr. Light episode, in my opinion. I mean, he was there, but.
But he was on a screen.
Yeah, so maybe another easy episode to shoot while the doctor's doing other obligations.
I do want to mention on that for just a moment, but I also, before I forget it, I want to say, and did I just, I did. Okay, so I'm going to mention, we'll come back to that. Maybe I'll remember it. Talking about a Dr. Light, one of the things that I keep seeing on social media are some of the people saying, why cast him if he can't commit? If he wasn't going to be on there, why even cast him? Well, number one, he didn't just go and blanket audition. They called his agent to see if he was available. He went and auditioned and then got the role. So it wasn't that, you know, he went out and tried to get the role, number one. And number two, it wasn't his fault that he already had a commitment that he wanted to honor. That's, to me, just like he does something else and he says, no, I need to honor my Doctor Who commitments. That's just professionalism, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't think anybody can fault him too much for having to take care of his obligations and scheduling. And we have to get the season out now and, you know, shooting schedules. So, yes, it's a big, huge thing to keep everybody in, get everybody in the same place to shoot something like this. So I don't fault him too much.
And Nicole brings up a very interesting point. They did the same thing with Tennant and Hamlet back in 2009. Mm-hmm, absolutely. Yeah. I know what it was I was going to say.
Okay.
While he was acting his acting chops off with that scene, very subtle, but equally to me as powerful, because it helped frame and make the scene work, was Millie Gibson's disgust. Because it's easy to forget, for all intents and purposes, the mom who's taken care of her and the grandma she knows are black.
Yeah.
You know, so it's not like she's the white girl, so to speak.
Right.
So I loved how she portrayed the disgust at them, as well as the pain that she saw him in and responding to that. Right. Absolutely loved both of their performances.
And the way she does some of that physically with the doctor, she wants to touch him, but she also knows she needs to let him, you know, work it out. So she keeps reaching for him, but you know, it's heartbreaking and really very, very well chosen. So
answer me this. Why do you guys think that as an actor, Schuette chose to laugh before scream? Thought.
Well, somebody in the chat just said something brilliant about it, and I've already lost it. But the gist was, it was Lei Jin. His reaction's so good because the situation is so dumb and so frustrating at the same time. You have to laugh at the sheer stupidity of this, but also, I can save you if. You're going to say no for
sometimes you laugh to keep from crying.
Exactly. And he's just going to give us a quick burst of both. And I love how long it took him to go through that door in the TARDIS. It's just such a neat button to the episode.
And is that not the perfect image? I mean, that to me is like one of those classic, you know, how you see, I'm picturing John Pertwee, one of those classic pictures of him coming out of the TARDIS, you know, having that.
That's right.
Image, you know, that you immediately knew what I was talking about, didn't you, Lee? Yep. So this to me is another one of those images. I think that will be one of his images of that picture of going into the TARDIS and kind of looking back and that look on his face. Just awesome. Also, Murray Gold took the 15th Doctor's theme, slowed it down, made it so much more different than what it normally is. It wasn't that happy-go-lucky, energetic theme. It was bold, morose, whatever you want to call it. It just was awesome. All right, gentlemen, before we get into our final ratings, anything else either of you want to bring up before we move into those?
Not for me. Mm.
Clarence?
No, I don't have anything, man.
All right. And we have a comment from Chris Timby. It says, and these bubble kids are now orphans that do not wish to be rescued.
There you go.
Right. It's a hard knock life for them. Just
they've,
telling you.
They've got some brutal lessons they're about to learn, I think.
So, yeah.
I don't know. But yeah, they're going to get eaten.
Yeah.
Because didn't we sort of suggest that the big Ooh. Bug things, that they're from the woods anyway, right?
Yes, I think Ooh, so. Yeah.
Okay, oh, I have to bring up this comment from Lee Jan. Whew, at Nicole, the day you learn you're a black man, so relatable. The doctor, is this when he realizes he's black? It could be his episode. And let me say this. I was waiting for them to do this with Jody, the whole run of Jody. They kind of did it in a few circumstances, but they never played it, I think, for the seriousness that it could have been at times. Yeah. So, yeah, to see them kind of, you know, take this on directly, I think it's kind of cool.
Mm.
Yeah, that was my high hope for Jody's season two. And when they were going to dunk her as a witch, I think was the closest we ever came to it, which is kind of a special circumstance. I like, that's not just because you're a woman, but yeah, okay. So, yeah. When Grace asks, there's no snow in this episode.
That's interesting.
I feel like there wasn't time for it, but
yeah.
But it's a good point.
I'm still stuck on those orphans and thinking, you know, maybe the slugs will come out tomorrow. Oh, that was fun. One more thing before we move on. I, as par course, always after watching an episode that's new, will watch my favorite reactors on social media or on YouTube. From Jessica with Seska Says to all the others that I've watched, one thing that was universal that says even as a fandom, the Doctor is better than us as a fandom. While the Doctor is saying, please, if you'll let me do anything,
I can save you.
Everybody that I'm watching are going, bleep, 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 let him die, let him die, bleep, bleep, bleep. So, just saying.
Cue the Project Pat. Don't save her. Yeah. You know, you know.
They wanted there to be a waterfall on the other side of it, where the boat was going.
So, yeah. I briefly had a moment. This is the last thing I'll say before we move on. I briefly had a moment to go into After the Snap Movies and TV's chat before we got started, our friend Tasha. And I made a comment in her chat that I want to make here in regards to them making the comment about the Doctor and all, they all look alike and whatnot. My comment was, well, I know a race of beings that mostly they all live alike. Maybe they could go and live on that planet. I think it's called Skaro. Good place for them to call home.
Yeah.
All right. So with that being said, let's get into our favorite scene. Lee Shackelford, I'll start with you. Favorite scene.
Well, hard to beat that rejection of the Doctor and the obvious reasons why. You know, I didn't enjoy it. I don't like it. But as, you know, as a powerful scene, yeah, that's,
yep,
it's hard to beat that.
Clarence Brown, favorite scene.
I think mine is going to be the scene with Ricky September, although it's, you know, another tragic scene. Sometimes when things get dark, you see who people really are. And, you know, when life is on the line, she's out of there and he's helping her. He's helping. He's going to bat for her quite literally against the dot. So, yeah.
Very good.
He did go to bat for her, didn't he?
He did, literally. And had a very good bat, because I'm telling you, I'd just been swinging the bat like, hello.
Yeah.
let me, what did you guys think of the naming, the ordering of the name? I thought that was kind of weird, because all of a sudden she realized Ricky's real name is not September, it's something else that's way up in the alphabet, and he is instantly offed.
I thought, and I think I mentioned this to you, Clarence, I thought that if it's a robot AI or an AI that's creating something, the sequencing from A to Z kind of makes sense. But at the same time, I'm wondering, because I picked this up earlier today, one of the people that she goes and meets, the guy, his name, I think, was Chamberlain. So why wasn't he already dead? Unless he had escaped even, close or even sooner. Yeah. So All right. So for my favorite scene, and again, for the same reason that Lee said, you know, it's not because I love this scene for what it was. I love it for how Schuette acted and portrayed the scene and pulled off the scene that was heart-wrenching to me, was the final scene. I mean, hands down, that scene alone is what makes this a memorable episode for me. So that's it. So favorite quote. Clarence, I'm going to start with you. Favorite quote.
You don't know me, but my name is the Doctor, and there are monsters out there that are coming to get you.
Mm. All right. Lee Shackelford, favorite quote, and I have a feeling I know what it is.
I bet you're wrong.
Okay.
Forward, 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 forward.
Bravo, sir. Bravo.
All right. I thought you were going with Dr. P, but I guess I was wrong. All right. So I was wrong. I absolutely was wrong. I took the low-hanging fruit from my favorite scene, was the Doctor saying, I don't care what you think. You can say whatever you want. You can think absolutely anything. I will do anything if you will just allow me to save your lives.
Yeah.
Beautiful. All right. So everyone in the chat, I am about to start with final ratings. If you want to give your rating 1 out of 5 and tell us 1 out of 5 what's, I do have some from our Facebook chat that I will be reading. But if you are in the chat and would like to contribute, by all means, please do. So for final ratings, I did a X, formerly known as Twitter, poll, and found out that they only allow us now to do 4 options. So of the 4 options, 43% gave 5 out of 5. 4 was 31%. 3 was 14%, and 1 or 2 was 12%. All right, so from Facebook, Chaz Samuel, who is Charlie Unicorn that I mentioned last week, he gave it 4 dots out of 5. He takes a point off due to the fact that the dots didn't finish the job. Morgan,
give him time. Give
yes,
him time.
Indeed. Morgan Lee says 4 shocking betrayals out of 5. Chris Timby says 5 stumbling, grumbling baby steps out of 5. Janet Hall, who is in the chat, just upped it to 1 out of 5. And yes, 1 suddenly got my running legs out of 5 from Janet Hall. Kath Stahl gives it 4 itsy bitsy teeny weeny yellow polka dot bikinis out of 5. Harold Katz gives it 3 punches on a numeric keypad out of 5. Maddie Tilly gives it 4.5 giant man eating slugs out of 5 and goes on to say brilliant episode and so thought-provoking too. Tasha Pierce from After the Snap gives 4.25 swift kicks in the rear for racism out of 5. Kevin O'Brien gives 5 slugs out of 5 and he says he wanted to lower it because he had given 5 to Boom and 73 yards, but this episode's message, excuse me, really haunts. And only, let's see, we got 2 more left, and they are Claire Ashton, 4.5 blocking the lot of them out of 5, and Tad Davis, 4, I seem to be rating everything 4 this season, out of 5. This episode broke my heart. All right, Lee Shackelford, what say ye?
Giving it 4.5 batteries that you can charge in 30 seconds, out of 5.
All right, Clarence, what say you? You said what, 4.5. 4.5, okay.
I'm going to give this 3 Ricky September dances out of 5.
Yeah. Awesome. So just a curious quick question. Did our conversation up the ante any?
Yeah, I mean, I think this conversation, along with some others I've had over the course of the weekend, have pushed my rating up to 3.
Awesome. Yeah. And that's all we can ask. Absolutely. Cool. Me, I'm going to give this easily 5 out of 5. I feel weird by saying I love this episode, but I loved the message. And I love the fact that we're sitting here having a thought-provoking, deep episode, and we're not talking fluff. We're not talking about, oh, well, this, and regardless of space babies, we're not talking about, you know, a booger monster and using methane gas from nappies to, you see what I'm saying? We're talking about real world stuff. So
yeah, well, you're stupid.
Yeah. Hey, Kyle, can I say, when I first started chatting with you about this, with you guys in our Discord about this episode, I was like, it just seemed like the doctor was barely there and most of it was shot on green screen. I'm like, it even looks like at the end, he did the whole scene in like a green screen because they were so tight on the shot. You're like, no, man, I'm looking at the video, the BTS now. He was there. I say, oh, cool. So let me go look. Like, oh, I guess he was there.
Yeah.
But then I was told the episode was about racism. I was like, what?
What?
But I guess, yeah.
I was honest, because did I not follow that up in saying, but now I have to be honest, you know, I could be watching an episode, and if it was the 15th Doctor, because I really like the 15th Doctor, and I would basically be happy watching the 15th Doctor watch paint dry. So I did say you that, did. You know, by, you know, just being clear and whatever. There we go. All right. So in the chat, we have from Lei Jin, 3.75 poles to the face out of 5. Love it. Love it. Love it. Wynn Grace gives 3.5 practical slugs out of 5. Mm-hmm. There we go. All right. So for everyone listening, this has been fun. Absolutely been fun. Thank you. We will be back next week for the Bridgerton episode. Can't wait for that. And I've been
That's
waiting.
That's not what it's called.
Yeah. It's called Rogue, but.
Rogue.
Talk about tea time.
Because I've been waiting all episode to try to figure out a way to work this into the episode. So in closing, I'm saying, Clarence, you came with a different opinion, and that was so brave. Remember, that's what she said. He was so brave.
Don't explain yourself. We're just going to go with that.
Just leave it alone.
Oh, and with that, everyone, thank you for joining us. And as always, we will be back next time.
You've been listening to the Discussing Network. Find out more at discussingnetwork.com.